The Spinoff Podcast Network.
Talofa, I'm Madeline Chapman, editor of The Spinoff. I'm just popping in to the When the Facts Change feed to share the first episode of my new podcast, Behind the Story. Each Saturday, I'll be sitting down with a staff writer or contributor to gain more insight into a big story on The Spinoff from the week, and I'd love for you to have a listen. If you enjoy this little taster, be sure to follow Behind the Story on your favourite podcast player for a new episode every weekend. So here it is, the very first episode of Behind the Story.
It's hard to get people necessarily in the fast-moving homepage environment that we work in to pay attention to stories about councils and budgets. And so often the way that we find out about these kinds of things is through what I like to call complaint media.
Talofa Lover, I'm Madeline Chapman, editor of The Spinoff. Welcome to Behind the Story, where I go behind the scenes of a big article on The Spinoff from the week. The Spinoff has always said it's an online magazine, and if it were a weekly print mag, these stories would be on the cover. If you want a weekly rundown of some of the best reads from The Spinoff every Saturday, make sure you sign up to the weekend newsletter. Today I'm talking to Anna Rafferty Connell about a couple of stories she wrote this week. One is a column about trust in the media, which we have had a fair bit on in The Spinoff already, and the other is headlined, "If you love a dog, you must also love disposing of its shit." How are these stories related? Well, we're about to find out. Anna has been our bulletin editor for the past 2 years, and if you're not a bulletin newsletter subscriber, you really should be. She's curated the news from around the country each weekday morning and has just signed off on her last edition. Now she's here to talk about what she learned on the job, why people might not trust the media, and why a story about dog poo perfectly illustrates that conundrum. Here's Anna Rafferty Connell on Behind the Story. Hi, Anna.
Hi, Mad.
Please tell me about this week, because it's a big week for you. You have just wrapped up 2 years as the Bulletin editor. What has it been like at the end of basically being really deep in news and media for 2 years and coming to the end of that?
I mean, I feel good about it. And I feel good about the fact that I'm staying at The Spinoff as head of audience and as a senior writer. I think I have learned more than I really expected to about the way media works. I didn't come from a newsroom or journalism background, and so have had to really, I guess, learn the way that it works in terms of its publishing rhythm, in terms of, you know, bylines and journalists and beats and all of that kind of stuff, the different forms and types of media, in order to put together, you know, what's been a daily news email for a fairly dedicated and loyal audience.
And you have written something, we're talking on Friday, and we have written something this morning.
Yes.
About the media, sort of a little bit of discussing what you have learned and your thoughts on the general kind of, I guess, people talking about falling trust in media, and that's quite a common theme at the moment, which we will not go too far into.
We will not. But I guess what I will say is that in conjunction with being the bulletin editor for the last year, I have also been the head of audience. And as I said, without the journalism background, my background is in marketing communications. And so I suppose I have always, especially over the last year, been trying to straddle a bit of a chasm around that. And I find the conversation about trust in media quite interesting. I think sometimes the audience is a little bit absent from that conversation. And I also think that there are some very real things about both human nature around trust and who we trust. And I believe that by and large to be people, first and foremost, up against this kind of quite amorphous idea of the institution. And I think, I guess, in the piece, what I have tried to do is gently unpick the framing of the trust and media debate in terms of it being quite, you're talking about quite big, broad concepts, and it sort of feels like a lot of the conversation has been quite blunt and has been used kind of either as a way to probably fall on our swords a little bit as the media, which is possibly a bit necessary, but also as a way to beat us around the head. And I just think it's all a lot more complicated, and you'll be very unsurprised to hear this nuanced than a lot of the headlines make out. But people can read that too long piece and see what they think about it all.
You talk in the piece about this recent, basically, incident that happened on your street, which
yes.
involved police, and meant that you answered the door on consecutive days to a journalist and then to a police officer. And I think most people wouldn't consider those two professions to be that similar, but there is something in police and media or news media being these large institutions that as a whole feel very, honestly, easy to distrust. And I think your anecdote about being quite trusting of that individual police officer, who in that moment you were very happy to see, and being very trusting of individual journalists who you trust to do good work, is quite fitting, because there is this idea that, you know, people can distrust the idea of something, but then also be very trusting of the people, individuals who might be working within that place. And to really labour the point, this whole podcast is about sort of demystifying some of the people and the processes that go into making a story that people might read in amongst 100 other things in a week. And the way that we frame those stories can be extremely influential. What we choose to focus on, you know, there's a lot of sort of power in that that I think sometimes we as journalists take for granted. So I'm quite interested in what you read or saw that inspired you to write your other piece this week, which is headlined, "If you love a dog, you must also love disposing of its shit." Great headline, by the way. Where did that come from? This seems just not a news story, but it really was.
Oh, it absolutely was. There had been a few stories over the last couple of weeks about something that has been happening in popular dog walking spots around Auckland. And there's been quite a lot of coverage I would describe as pearl clutching about the fact that Auckland Council has removed a whole lot of rubbish bins. So as we should probably all be aware of, councils are really under the pump at the moment when it comes to their finances. And so Auckland Council has been trying to reduce the number of rubbish bins from about 10,000 to 7,000. In response, some dog walkers in our leafier suburbs in this city have become enraged at the removal of the rubbish bins to the point where they have decided that it is fine to leave piles of bags of their dog's shit where the bins used to be. So I've been reading those stories for a couple of weeks, growing increasingly angry about it. And I have to say, it wasn't really even the words, although there are some fantastic phrases in some of the stories and in my own piece, if I do say so myself. It was the pictures. It was the photos that made me think, how do people think it's okay to behave like that? Grown adults who made a choice to have a dog, leaving that there for somebody else to have to deal with. And I suppose the piece is quite funny. I have a deep belief in using humour to gently or not so gently needle people. But there's something like quite serious about it as well, in terms of asking people. I do find people's intolerance for personal inconvenience quite annoying.
You have an intolerance for their intolerance.
I'm intolerant about intolerance. But I think particularly now, when there are so many reasons for us to be really mindful of the consequences of our choices, and particularly the convenience that is on offer to us. And I just couldn't get my head around people feeling that they were entitled to do that.
I think it is that the story itself, and this kind of goes back to the framing, the story itself of cost cutting in council, where they're choosing to cut those costs, the fact that they're choosing to remove rubbish bins, you know, on this, that's not a uncontroversial thing in and of itself. But it was quite interesting to see that the response to that decision that people didn't like was to probably go against all natural instincts and just leave their shit there, which is kind of like, that is to go from, here's a story about council and budgets and where should we be spending money in our cities, to here's a story about some pretty wealthy people refusing to carry their dog's feces for another 100 metres to the other bin, which is around the corner.
I mean, I think it's hard to get people necessarily in the fast-moving homepage environment that we work in to pay attention to stories about councils and budgets and the seriousness of those kinds of issues. And so often the way that we find out about these kinds of things is through the lens of kind of what I like to call complaint media, which is, I guess, the framing or the hierarchy around how these stories kind of get told is, first and foremost, there's a bunch of people that are angry and outraged about something. Then there's kind of a very slightly sensational hook into a story, which is about dog shit. Who's not going to read about that? Because it's gross. And I think people, you know, they love to read things about gross stuff and the grotesque. And then within that story, you get the, this is what the guy from the council said. When I actually read the story and I read the comments from the council, they're actually incredibly reasonable and very measured. But I think the tenor of the kind of framing, you know, in terms of public outrage and a sense of entitlement, I think that's really, you know, what, rather than, I suppose, having a go at the individuals kind of doing it, it's really that my dog shit piece is trying to skewer.
I mean, I think that is every single story we have. Local politics is very hard to get people involved in, which is why, you know, the stories that people read are someone complaining about a cycleway, somebody complaining about a pedestrian crossing, somebody complaining about rubbish bins. And, you know, I love to complain more than most people, so I am extremely sympathetic to that. But I think that is something that does sometimes feed, it's like a snake eating its tail, in that a story that says, well, maybe it would have been read just as much if the story was framed as, look at all these people leaving their shit around, as opposed to look what happens when you remove the bins. Because it's the same story, the same actions, but it comes across very differently. And I think that sort of framing is something we make those decisions every day, how we're going to frame something. We at the Spinoff, we love to put a little hooky headline on something. We put the word come in a headline yesterday to get people reading about unions, because again, it's not something that necessarily people will naturally click on, but you put the word come in a headline
and they're there.
And they come.
They come. I think, like, if you take it back to some of that stuff around trust in the media, you know, people will say, I only want to read facts and serious and important stuff. And I think it's important not to be too driven or oriented around metrics and clicks and all of that kind of stuff. But we also know what people do read. And we exist in an environment, unless you are wholly publicly funded, we exist in an environment where a certain amount of scale and number of eyeballs is kind of crucial and critical to our survival. And so I think, you know, I'm biased, but I think the Spinoff has a kind of a gentler approach to, I mean, sure, come in a headline is not that gentle, and nor is the word shit, but we, I think, are gentler in the way that we might hook people in. But you can also see why that is something that people say that they're kind of annoyed about as far as media kind of goes. And, you know, I guess the other thing is that when you're talking about something like council or unions, they are as much of a kind of amorphous blob of an institution as media is. And that is why that human framing, whether it be the complaint outrage, is often what leads or often what kind of gets picked up as a way into a broader issue. So we might kind of use humour and swear words. Other outlets will run with kind of, you know, what looks and feels a little bit like anecdata, you know, kind of here's one person or three people's experience and extrapolate it out. But quite often what they are trying to do is, I guess, talk about some of the stuff that people say they want to hear about, but then, you know, wouldn't click on if it was something about Auckland Council budget blah, you know?
Yeah, and I think our big goal is often, if there's a story that people are talking about, how can we come in and have something on that story without repeating what other people have said, which is basically how we got to you writing about the council decision to remove bins by talking about picking up your dog's liquid shit at the beach because he shat in the water.
He did, yeah.
And I think that is the beauty of journalism.
Well, it kind of is. I think, you know, there's like the issue-based stuff, and then there's just a bunch of humans sitting around a table talking about what's on the slate for the week. And most of us have a useful anecdote that adds an element of either our own kind of experience and therefore the human experience to writing stories about things like bin removal, or it starts a chain of conversation with other people who have had those experiences or who might have expertise in certain areas. I mean, I think there is a lot of power that we hold in the media in terms of the way stuff gets framed and also what gets covered. But I also think people would be quite surprised at sometimes how quickly we get from this big gnarly issue to, oh, I know exactly how to cover that in a way that people are going to read about.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And just to finish up, I'm quite interested in, you said you're going to be carrying on at the spin-off as senior writer. I just said that as if that was news to me. I did know about
Surprise!
That. but what are the areas that you will be looking at? Now, you know, you've spent 2 years deeply reading news of all sorts.
I have, yes.
What now are you like, this is where I want to focus my attention?
Well, I think I want to stay nimble and available to do the kinds of things I did with Dog Shit, which is pick up some stuff around...
Pick up Dog Shit.
I am a dedicated Dog Shit picker-upper of my own dog's poo. So again, how do you use humour or satire or something like that to get into something deeper and do that quite quickly, so quite fast turnaround stuff. I'm interested in having a bit more brain space now that I won't be on the bulletin to think about some stuff a little bit more deeply and do some more feature writing. I think I'm also very keen, I suppose, on taking everything I've learned and read around, you know, the political environment and the political world. And I think one of the things that will carry through from my work on the bulletin is essentially giving people a way into stuff to help them kind of understand, maybe at a broader or more macro kind of level, you know, if something kicks off in the House or there's a specific kind of announcement or backtrack, or, you know, where does that fit in the, I guess, the sort of broader world of politics and kind of what's going on. I think it's, you know, picking up of that sort of smaller stuff and adding a layer of, yeah, I guess it's just analysis and commentary really. And I think, yeah, hopefully continuing to do that in a way that is very spin-off.
Thank you for coming on Behind the Story, Anna Rafitikono. You can read Anna's excellent I'm calling it an op-ed, which makes it sound very highbrow. If you love a dog, you must also love disposing of its shit, with the incredible opening line, "You haven't truly lived until you've stood on the shoreline of Auckland's Cheltenham Beach, desperately trying to scoop increasingly liquid dog shit into a bag."
It's a true story.
Thank you very much, Anna.
You're very welcome, Mad. Thank you.
The Spin-off Podcast Network.